The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals, whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation. Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
I'm Larry O'Connor alongside Brian Wilson.
And I just want to mention for this next segment, if you follow us on Facebook, you can see it live because we're podcasting, we are cybercasting.
We're live streaming.
Live streaming.
On Facebook Live.
So hello everybody on Facebook.
Like WMALDC on Facebook and see what it looks like.
Yeah, behind the scenes, right. Joining us now is Del Wilber, New York Times bestselling author. He wrote a book about Rawhide Down. This was the Reagan assassination attempt. But you got a new book out, and I'm anxious to get all the details about it. It's called A Good Month for Murder. And what you did was you sort of embedded with the homicide squad in Prince George's County during a very, very busy month for that homicide squad. Tell us a little bit about that.
I did. I want to say thanks for having me. This is great. Love this show.
Good, thanks.
And it's really awesome that people can actually see how handsome we are.
Yes.
On Facebook, if you go there, see how the sausage is actually made.
That's right.
And stuff like that. Well, maybe not. I don't know. All right. Well, you know, I really wanted to, you know, I love books where I delve into characters and, you know, peel back the veil on people who do really interesting and hard things. And I really wanted to peel back the veil on how guys and gals solve murders, mm-hmm. how they do that job. And right now we're having this huge national debate about policing and how police do their job. So I said, I'm going to go, you know, this debate is just starting to foment, I want to go embed with the elite of the elite, which are homicide detectives, the most consequential job in law enforcement, speaking
right.
for the dead, and how they do the job. And that's what I set out to do.
And you chose this month randomly, February 2013, right? I mean, was that just a month in random?
Well, I actually spent 6 months with them.
Okay. Wow.
And then I looked back at the 6 months, and I realized I had this great narrative of February. Because I also love Rawhide Down is a book about one day
right.
that pushes all these people to limits. And I looked at this. I was like, February 2013, 12 murders, 3 police shootings, the furious hunt for a killer of a totally innocent young girl, and a Red Ball case, which is a high-profile murder, a Red Ball. And this pushed these guys, I mean, like crazy. Like, they were falling asleep in interrogation rooms. By the end of this month, I fell asleep pumping gas. Hmm. I fell asleep at a red light. I mean, it was intense. And I love that. It reveals character.
And you found along the way some very interesting characters are charged with the responsibility of investigating these murders.
Yeah, you know, I got fortunate. I was very fortunate in the characters that kind of found me or I found them as I did this. I have a diet pill popping cheeseburger eater, a chain smoking vegan,
yeah.
the female quarterback of a semi-pro football team, and a dude who bragged about the herbal erection enhancers he took. And those are the investigators.
Are you sure that this wasn't a radio station you were embedded with? Yeah, yeah. I'm just asking for a friend. Well, let me ask you this, Del. I mean, if there was one takeaway that people don't understand, if there's one takeaway that people don't understand about police officers and especially homicide detectives, what is it? If there's one, what the one thing that opened your eyes?
You know, I found them to be a really great homicide detective, you need like a bunch of different skill sets. It's like a very cerebral job, but a very on-the-street job at the same time in some ways. You got to be dogged, creative, and get really lucky. But you can't have any of those three without the other two.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, in some policing jobs, you could just go through the day, you know, call to call to call.
That's right.
But this job requires that skill set to be any good at it. And I was fortunate in that the characters I could choose for the book, right? Like, I can choose.
Right.
Like, I chose the ones that were not only the most, like, outlandish and creative, but also dogged and lucky. And my hope is that, like, if you read the first book or you know the first book, I don't make value judgments or opinions. I trust your listeners and my readers when they read this book to get a sense of what it really is like.
Mm-hmm.
And I trust them to do that. So I just show what happened, in-depth reportage, and I let people make their own value judgments about
these
guys. Now,
what was the most significant, surprising thing that you found during these investigations? And as you wrote along, what was the thing that you just went, wow, I had no idea?
You know, their use of technology and social media to solve crimes
really
surprised me.
Yeah.
You know, the cell phone stuff. They use a lot of cell phone stuff. Also, kind of like the life imitates art, art imitates life. Like some these guys are nothing like TV, right? They're nothing like CSI, or we all hear that. But when you see it, you really recognize, oh my gosh, that's really not the case. But also, there are moments where you're like, oh my gosh, they're playing good cop, bad cop. And it's actually working. I mean, don't these suspects like watch TV?
Yeah, exactly. Well, I saw this in a Law and Order 3 years ago.
Yes, yeah. Come on, guys.
The book is A Good Month for Murder, The Inside Story of a Homicide Squad. It's by Del Quentin Wilbur. He's our in-studio guest right now, which also you can pick up live on Facebook Live. And then this will be available later as well as a recording. We're going to continue with Del Wilbur. There's plenty of, and because this is a local story, we want to talk a little bit about specifically how these cops and how these stories affect our community and what is misunderstood about the people here in Washington. That's coming up in a moment, along with traffic and weather.
Right now it is 7:43. 7:47 on WMAO, where Washington comes to talk. We are joined in studio today by Del Wilbur, who has written a book called A Good Month for Murder. It chronicles the life and the backgrounds and the and interesting stories of homicide detectives from Prince George's County. You know, I've often sort of noted here lately that we seem to be in a time and a place where this area has gotten very mean. I mean, there was a time, I remember back in the 80s when we went through a really rough time. Many people said it was driven by crack sales, and crack was very much on the streets, and this town got mean. It got ugly, and there were a lot of murders. And I'm hearing now that there is sort of an uptick in murder. What's driving it, in your opinion?
Well, you know, I think murders are still at their historic low, like over the last few years, but there has definitely been, in certain areas, a surge in homicide. Chicago, yeah. L.A., D.C. was up for a while. PG had an uptick, too. Not a huge one, but had an uptick. I think in Baltimore, you know, just up by 95. And I think that it will be something that confounds sociologists and criminologists for decades to come. And they still argue about what caused the surge in the homicide rate in the 80s and 90s and things like that. So it's one of those, it's like, how many angels can you fit on the head of a pin? No one ever answers it for me.
Up in Baltimore, our suburban neighbor to the north there, they're beginning the third trial for a police officer involved in the Freddie Gray murder. And the whole Black Lives Matter movement has sort of sprung up since this month that you chronicled here, because this was February 2013. So you know, the whole Black Lives Matter thing happened a little bit later. But can you tell us a little bit about the racial makeup of the cops that you were embedded with, and if they approached their job differently based on their culture, based on their race?
That's a really great question. I find it fascinating that sorry.
We do that dance every time.
A little right. dance.
Anytime somebody says that's a great question, we do a little dance.
And
we
forget, usually people who
people
say that
see
can't
it.
See it, and right, I apologize.
Right, so. Oh, okay, sorry. Right, that's good. That's sorry, we got distracted there. No, we're talking about how they approach their, right. the murder investigations and stuff. And I think that I never, you know, when I look back at it, it never came up. Like, the race of and the culture of the place never came up, because these guys and women were just focused on the job in front of them.
The law. And, the law and, has no race. Yeah.
Right. Well, I mean, I think that there are aspects of it, but it's more like the frustration of people, like, lying to them all the time, or, you know, not being able to get through and get the right evidence, or, you know, people, like, just, you know, being very antagonistic in the interrogation room or interview rooms and stuff. I think that would frustrate them. You know, just the sad, macabre nature of the job can get a little rough, but not so much the race thing.
And to that end, how much do our constitutional rights factor into their daily work? You know, the interrogations, the searching, the evidence. I mean, they know the rules, and how often is that, you know, sort of a barrier or applied to their job?
You know, there were moments where it was like, you know, did the person really come in voluntarily or not? But they play these games. Yeah. But I never watched them. I never saw anyone break the law.
Yeah.
I never saw anyone do anything unethical, according to, like, the standards that we have now. Like, the Supreme Court has said you can use deceit and trickery. And so I watched them give a fake DNA report to a guy. And this guy gets this fake DNA report saying he did this murder, right? And he starts sobbing and breaks down. And the detective peels back this guy's story. And the story that he realizes in peeling back this guy's story that he couldn't have done it. But he's such a sobbing mess, he'll confess to anything. So the detective leaves the room, closes the door, and says to another detective, I can get him to confess to anything. You have any open murders? And he's joking, but he's joking, you know? Yeah. Yeah. And like, and also, like, you know, this book is filled with that kind of, there's a lot of humor in it, you know. There's a lot of humor in it.
Yeah, and if you've ever hung around with cops, especially detectives, they're a colorful bunch.
Right.
Yeah,
no, they definitely
that's
are.
Picked up in this book quite well. Del Wibber, it's a pleasure to have you here, and good luck with the book.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, and it's a great title, by the way.
Yeah.
Good Month for Murder. I mean, that sounds like a movie.
Oh, well,
or at least a lifetime.
Do you know
movie.
Do you know anyone in Hollywood?
We'll hook you up.
Well, actually, he does.
Yeah, there's a couple of people.